Welcome to your Thursday. Good morning. 6:06, getting a little break in the sky already. Looks like we're off to a good start this morning. You stayed up late and watched some hockey last night. You're really up early. Congratulations on that. I'm impressed. Two game sevens in the NHL. Game five in the NBA last night. Boston Celtics cruising over the Washington Wizards. I figured out that the Wizards are not worth watching on the road this year. That's kind of what a lot of NBA teams are seemingly, besides the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. If you're not at home, you're not going to play well. Pittsburgh did go on the road last night in the NHL and beat the Washington Capitals in D.C. So the Penguins still alive to win back-to-back Stanley Cups, I guess. And Anaheim, a big winner over Edmonton, 2-1.
Ah, I feel like I had just morphed this show into a beautiful conglomerate of hockey and NBA because it was a baseball game, too, last night. And we lead off with hockey talk, game sevens. It was a good night. Pittsburgh and Washington, not a bad game. Not bad. Kind of, you know, that's the thing about game sevens across the board. The intensity, the fact that one team is done. When you get there, whether it's the NBA or Major League Baseball, but the action and the pace of hockey, I think always makes it, and generally just because of the way the game's played, it's generally more low scoring. I feel like you get better contest. Anaheim coming back last night, they fell down to Edmonton 1-0. And so game sevens in hockey, and I think I was listening to some national shows yesterday, a lot of people seem to agree that's probably the best thing going in sports outside of anything NFL related. If you take all the series playoff events, Major League Baseball, NBA, and NHL, and you throw them all together, those are the best game sevens, and I'm sure a lot of people disagree with that. But at the end of the day, man, it was a good night. Quite enjoyable. Watched a little baseball, too. Cardinals and Marlins as well. That didn't get on the I don't know. Here's a question.
What random game is that to watch?
Well, because I've told you there are times that I feel like me, speak for you, but me, that I take certain players for granted and I don't watch them enough.
Giancarlo Stanton?
Yep. Wanted to see him because, man, he hits home runs. He hits them really far. The Marlins actually as a team hit a lot of home runs. I don't know if you'd label them necessarily entertaining, but they hit a lot of home runs. And so, yeah, just a little Wednesday night baseball. Sorry that on the 10th, I got involved in a little Major League Baseball last night.
It's an odd time to do it with Game 7s on. Well, I mean, NBA playoffs were on.
Well, no. Number one, the NBA playoffs, look, as a whole, now I think we can say these things stink. I mean, even last night, 123-101, this is just bad. There's nothing.
16-point game at half, I
there's
believe.
There's nothing entertaining about what's going on. You got one.
Isaiah Thomas is pretty entertaining. Come on. Is it because he's 2 inches taller than you? Is that the problem?
No, I'm all for that.
Okay.
Gives me hope.
Okay.
Name could be called this year in the draft.
Well, the Gamecock baseball news that you were referring to, also something else you could have been watching last night. Carolina down 6-1 against Liberty, put up six big runs in one inning, and come all the way back, get three home runs from all the young guys, Danny Blair, Riley Hogan, Carlos Cortez, and Carolina ends up beating Liberty 10-7, a win that they really needed to have. Coley Bowers was solid out of the bullpen. Tyler Johnson did come in late in the ball game and was not solid. So Reed Scott had to come on for him, actually. So a little bit of drama there. We'll hear from Chad Holbrook as we continue to roll on. The Gamecocks will be traveling to Missouri, hopping on a plane today and heading to Missouri today for their weekend series. That is absolutely huge with just two SEC regular season series left. And they're 29-19 on the year, under 500 in conference play, and certainly square on the bubble in the NCAA tournament talk at this point. But last night's win, listening to the comments after the game, you get a sense that this team is feeling pretty good about itself heading to the weekend. And maybe they're in a place where they haven't been before. You had one hard-fought win really close against Presbyterian the night before last, and then last night being able to explode for 10 runs on offense against a Liberty team that came in with an RPI in the 50s. I think they certainly do feel better now, a chance for a rare three-game win streak at this point, and still looking to snap that six SEC series losing streak.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. I think, again, the body of work this year, they've been in this position before where you thought, well, maybe they were about to bounce back, maybe they were about to get things going, and then the bottom falls out again. We'll find out. Obviously, in terms of NCAA hopes, big series. I don't know We've said 7-2 is what they have to do. In my opinion, it's what they have to do to have any chance at the NCAA tournament.
So right now, that's become 5-2.
Right.
Right.
And so
that was with their last 9 games before this week started.
And so, you know, we'll see where it goes this weekend. Obviously, pitching has got to continue to be the strength of this team, and then you've got to get timely hitting. Now, with that being said, they have been on a run of playing really, really good teams. The only problem I have with that is South Carolina's a really good team. They should have been winning those series. To lose 6 straight is completely unacceptable. But with this team right now, you get the softest competition, I think it's fair to say, in Missouri, a team with a losing record in the SEC, a team that's not going to make the NCAA tournament. So with all that being said, here's an opportunity to go win a series. They have to do it. Otherwise, I think you don't win this series. The season's pretty much done, except for the final few games. I don't think they could get in. I said last week I thought they had to win the LSU series. Obviously, we talked about the Kendall Rogers tweet on Monday where he would like to hear the NCAA's justification for putting South Carolina in now. We'll see what happens. But obviously, anytime you can win back-to-back games, and maybe in the fashion South Carolina did it last night, it should give you momentum going into the weekend.
Well, about this time last week, they did score 9 runs to beat Wofford, but I was just looking back through the schedule. 10 runs last night against Liberty, the first time they've gotten to double digits on the offensive end since March 28th against the Citadel. Well, that was a 15-1 win, and they've only done it a handful of times on the season. So that's what I mean when I'm talking about feeling relatively good about themselves headed into the weekend. We'll see if that translates to any kind of sustained momentum, which this team just seemingly hasn't been able to come up with. They had the chance to do it early on in the year. They won 11 out of 12. And after the Clemson series, they certainly had the chance to close out Clemson and really make noise nationally. And they were still really highly thought of nationally at that point, but now they get a chance to make a little run to end their season strong and make their best case to head to the NCAA tournament. But you got to win a series against Missouri, and you got to win a series against Georgia after that to, in most people's minds, to have a convincing case at this point to make the NCAA tournament. Other news and notes out there: Gamecock basketball gets a commitment. We got ticket news for that South Carolina NC State game that will open the season. And we got Charlie Strong sitting down with that judge who just called him out. We'll give you some details on that. Also, a poll question. You talked about how we started the show with hockey, basketball, and playoffs. And we're talking baseball now. We'll have a poll question with multi-sports involved, getting your opinion on which one might be the most grueling. Carolina basketball news last night, getting a commitment from Justin Manaya, son of former Mets GM Omar Manaya. Interesting news there. He's a 6'6 guard.
Mm-hmm.
Had the chance to go back to prep school, I guess, or go to college. Ends up choosing the Gamecocks over a couple of basically mid-major programs is how I read the list. UNC Wilmington, Boston, Iona, UMass, Seton Hall, and Illinois. That, of course, is now being led by Brad Underwood, former Frank Martin top assistant, guy who has had a ton of success now as a head coach. That's his third head coaching stop here in the last few years.
Yeah, a good shooter, lefty, and South Carolina, I think that's the one thing that I think this upcoming team will be different from the previous team, is that this upcoming team will be a better shooting team. Corey Holden, you expect Rakim Felder to take a step, another step in the right direction as far as being a shooter. You bring in Justin, how do you pronounce his
Manaya.
Name? Manaya. Okay, make sure I get that correct. And that young man is considered right now more of a perimeter shooter. So should be a pretty good shooting team that Frank Martin will have next year. Maybe not as much of a slashing team the way you had Thornwell and Dozier being a little bit better at getting into the lane, getting in there and being able to hit the close range jumper. But certainly a good pickup. Now that puts them, I believe, one over the scholarship limit. I'm expecting probably 2 transfers, and I believe they're still trying. I believe he's coming in for an official visit this weekend. I don't have his name right in front of me. I know his last name is Al Stork, the transfer from Wright State, who is also considering several other big-time programs, about a 6'5 wing player that's got 1 year of eligibility, is an immediate graduate transfer who could make an impact for this team next year.
Also, an article from Josh Kendall, the state newspaper, talking about Belk kickoff ticket prices there for NC State and South Carolina, a little bit lower than the last time the Gamecocks went up there and started the season against North Carolina a couple of seasons ago, but not much lower. And I think it was Tom who called us yesterday or the day before, and he was not happy with that. I mean, still, the cheapest ticket price is $65, and that's only in one of five sections there in the upper deck. The other ones are $80, and then the highest ticket price is $245. Last time, the range was $258 to $70. The Will Webb, the guy with the basically who's in charge of making the ticket prices, the Charlotte Sports Foundation, he says he doesn't think that ticket prices were to blame for low attendance the last time that South Carolina and North Carolina played. He says we don't know why the upper level tickets didn't sell. It was on a Thursday night.
I was going to say, it's pretty simple. You had a team coming off a 7-6 year. You had I think the game time was 6 o'clock on a Thursday night in Charlotte, which Charlotte's, I think, a great place for South Carolina to play a game once every 2 years, kind of the schedule that they're on. I think they go back in 2019, if I'm right, and play North Carolina in another one of these kickoff games. But yeah, that was a combination of television really messing that one up, ticket prices, the day of the game. I think there will be more people at South Carolina NC State. I think the thing you have here is you have still a team that's 6-7 versus 7-6 team in NC State, and the ticket prices are pretty high. Now, with that being said, they're also kind of in line with these other kickoff games that you see around the country. It's not exactly an out-of-line ticket price when you compare it to, say, Florida, Michigan, who will play in Arlington. You got Florida State, Alabama, who will play in the new, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I believe, over in Atlanta. I think that's the right name for that one. Mm-hmm. So you've got the ticket prices are in line. I got yesterday, it was just kind of off topic when he called in, but I got where Tom was coming from, and he's not the only one. I had somebody hit me up, I believe Fish Taco hit me up on Twitter in response to the ticket prices the other day and was complaining about just how much it costs to go to that football game. And look, I get it, because would you say two middle price tickets are what, 140? 120?
Mm-hmm. I got it right in front of me right here. 135, it looks like. Yeah. I'd say 100 is probably, it looks like more the kind of right in the middle.
So 100?
In the lower section, yeah, you can either get you got two sections for 100 and two other sections for 135.
So
the club seats are 200 or more.
So let's say you get the $100 tickets, or 100, because I think the upper deck is 65 or 80.
Right. Most of them are 80. One section is 65.
So, let's say you spend, for you, if you're just going to go with a buddy, and you're probably going to have to get a hotel room. We don't know what time the game is at this point. But if you have to get a hotel room, I mean, you're looking at, before buying any food or anything, you're spending close to $250. And that's not even counting gas. So that's an expensive trip just up the road. I don't think you can really blame them. Ticket prices are what they are, but I still think that, you know, that is a downside to it. I don't expect attendance to be that much improved over the last time. Will it be improved? Yes, because it's a Saturday game, mm-hmm. and I think people are pretty fired up to see what this offense can do, but I don't expect it to be this great sold-out packed venue.
Yeah, I guess 12 to 15,000 empty seats as opposed to 20,000 empty seats last time. But, I mean, they're still steep, like Tom was mentioning. And you mentioned those other teams. Those other teams won a lot more games than either
of
these teams that are playing up in Charlotte.
But that's on the fan bases, too. Now, with that being said, those fan bases have to travel further. Michigan and Florida to make it to Arlington, Florida State and Alabama to make it to Atlanta. I mean, for South Carolina, it's a 90-minute drive, depending on where you live, just up the interstate, and you don't have to catch Thursday or Friday traffic to get to the ballpark.
Mm-hmm, and so, not that much further for Raleigh, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, so I think with all that being said, I don't think the ticket prices are outrageous, but I do get where South Carolina fans are coming from on that standpoint to have to play that game. Personally, I like the home and homes. I'm glad we get these bigger games. I'm glad we get Michigan, Florida to open the season. I'm really glad we get Alabama, Florida State, and maybe a preview of a national title game or something there over in Atlanta. I love the South Carolina NC State game. I think we've got Tennessee and Georgia Tech is another Labor Day, is the Labor Day Monday night game that I think will happen at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I like these kind of games. They're fun. Personally, though, I love the home and homes. I love seeing teams come to Williams-Brice. I like seeing South Carolina go places. That, to me, is the better football setup. But unfortunately, with television revenue, because everybody says, well, South Carolina's going to lose money. They're not going to lose money on this. You know, the Belk Bowl's still paying these two teams to come and play. South Carolina's not losing money on this game.
And I think the way the article reads in the state, again, the executive director of the Charlotte Sports Foundation there basically says the expensive seats sold last time. So it seems to me, reading his comments there, that that's more where their priority is as opposed to some of the cheaper tickets in the upper deck, maybe the more common fan there. Maybe that's just how they see things, and that's how they make their money. I thought that was about the second most interesting football story I read there this morning. The most interesting was that Charlie Strong met up with that Florida judge who recently called him out nationally, and they had about a 10-minute meeting that allegedly went well, but neither Charlie Strong or the judge commented on what was said. It was set up by another judge who wanted to give Strong a chance to fill that judge, the female judge who called him out, in on some details, in on some of the specifics, I think, of the challenges of his job, and I guess specifically maybe a couple of players that have been arrested recently.
Okay, so is she going to, I don't want to say, does she have to issue an apology just because, but what? Does she come out now and make a statement saying, look, I understand where Charlie's coming from, maybe I was, the only part that bothered me with all that was where she said, where basically she said she didn't, he needed to think about whether this was a job for him.
Right.
That was where the low blow kind of came in. I thought, like, you don't need to do that. But good for her, good for him. And look, I know a lot of people around here remember Charlie Strong as we get further and further away from it, but his time here as defensive coordinator, and he still has a lot of friends here. And I think, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, right before he went to Texas, a lot of people thought he would be the next head football coach at South Carolina. Had if he stayed at Louisville, following in the footsteps of Steve Spurrier, and there was a lot of people that were willing to have that happen. This is a guy, I think, with a very high reputation, very good character, and so glad to see he was willing to meet with her and kind of, I don't want to say bury the hatchet, because I don't think it was his fault, but good for her as well.
Again, I think overall, the thing that we take away from this is good on both sides, that a college football coach got basically challenged by a judge to make sure that his players behave better, and now the coach can fill in the judge on where he's coming from a little bit. So I think everyone gets a little bit more educated in this process.
Still not as good a story, though, as Jim McElwain. By the way, his like sit down interview, I believe it was someone from the Orlando Sentinel asked him about that, and his response, lighten up, Jim McElwain. Clearly, his wife, he's had to answer some questions to his wife on this thing, because his response, they ask him about this, and it is the most serious, like, no, it's not me. I don't know where this came from.
You wouldn't respond in the same way? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I would like to think I would be more lighthearted about it. Like, he's very offended by this whole thing. Like, this was a complete smear campaign that somebody put on Jim McElwain, what would you call it, a body suit, and found a shark.
So, Jen, did you ever subject yourself to seeing the picture? That looks like, that face is telling me yes.
That's that. Come on, that's funny, man.
Yeah, thanks to Dakota for sharing that with me.
Mm-hmm. Interns, man.
Still not maybe the most interesting football story. Well, definitely not the most interesting football story related to South Carolina yesterday. I want to get into this. A recruit thinks South Carolina was a little bit too hyped up prior to the Florida game, and now for him, it's Florida game, prior to the Tennessee game, and now it's personal for him. Mm. When South Carolina plays a certain opponent, it's personal because they were too excited in the locker room.
Gamecock baseball, a comeback winner last night, down 6-1, end up winning 10-7. Three home runs on the night for Carolina, the first time they've scored double-digit runs since March 28th. They'll have a chance to have a three-game win streak. I look up the last time they did that. I think that was also in March for sure. Looks like the beginning part of March might be the last time that happened. No, it's definitely the end of March when that happened last, as I'm looking at it, the old Alabama series, and then a win against the Citadel, the last three-game win streak, as I look at the Gamecock schedule here, trying to snap that six-series SEC losing streak with Missouri this weekend. They're on the plane today. Chad Holbrook with some comments after the game last night. We'll get to those as we continue to roll on this morning. Also, a commitment for Gamecock basketball, Justin Manaya, a 6'6 guard. You said he's a lefty, a bit of a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Going to help fill out this year's recruiting class. He's going to come and play this year. He's going to make it five new guys joining the team for Frank Martin. You said you expect maybe even a sixth to make that happen. Right now, the Gamecocks are one scholarship over the limit. We have seen throughout Frank Martin's tenure, though, that we usually get a transfer or two or even more than that after an offseason. No official word coming out about who might be leaving the program at this point.
Well, it's not just Frank Martin. It's college basketball as a whole. I think the numbers are up around – I haven't actually seen an official number this year, but I believe last I heard it was over 500 Division I transfers. When there's 328 teams, you're talking about basically one per team, maybe one and a half per team is where the numbers on that lie. So, yeah, someone right now will not be coming back. We won't speculate. I won't speculate on names. I don't really know who. And then there's a good chance that maybe two aren't coming back. And so we'll kind of see how that plays out.
Gamecock Larry's tablet just said two, Yes.
Yes.
Two, according. Well, we'll see. We'll see, and we'll give you the details when we know them there. But five guys coming in. How does this? How does Manaea fit in, by the way? How does he compare to a guy like David Beatty when you're talking about guards?
I think Beatty's more of a slasher, more of a guy who's going to be in that Sindarius Thornwell mold that wants to get into the lane, maybe finish around the rim. Doesn't mean he can't shoot it, but I think he's better at getting into the lane, being more of an attacking type guard, whereas I think Manaea will come in, and he's a younger kid. That's why he was considering prep school. He could have taken that route just to kind of allow his body to mature physically for a year. So I think Manaea will be a guy who needs to come in and hit the weight program. I don't know how many minutes you can realistically expect from him next year. Now, some of that depends on guys that perform in front of him and the development of a few players and how they come along. But he is a kid with his length and with his size that fits the mold of what Frank Martin likes. But we've seen guys, you know, Michael Carrera, Sindarius Thornwell, who played their – Dwayne Notice, who played their freshman year, who contributed, but they improved so much from freshman to senior year. I mean, you think about Carrera and Sindarius Thornwell in particular and where they went from their freshman year to having these career big-time senior seasons. I think we maybe don't give Michael Carrera enough credit for just how good he was his senior year.
Now, when you look at the backcourt for next year for Carolina, you got a sophomore in Felder, you assume moves into the point guard spot. You have the swing guard is how I've heard Corey Holden be described as, more of a scorer as opposed to a distributor. You have him as a junior, I believe, a junior coming in from Delaware. Eligibility-wise, Hassani Gravett will also be a junior. So you have older guys already in place. You got a really talented guy in Beatty coming in as a really well, highly thought-of recruit. And he's a guy that you expect to contribute immediately. And then that might afford a guy like Manaea. Maybe I read off his other offers, a guy that might be a bit of a reach for a major program that just went to a Final Four, but you might have that luxury if you're Frank Martin. I'm guessing that's what he's assuming. You can bring this guy along, develop him. You're not looking at what he's going to be in October. You're looking at what he's going to be 2-3 years down the line. That's what I'm hearing from.
I think that's fair. And look, I think right now one thing that fans have to do is whoever Frank Martin brings in, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, look at the team. That's, you know, Dwayne Notice, they beat out Duquesne for. You know, Justin Mackey was a contributor, and it wasn't like he had a ton of big-time offers. Obviously, Thornwell could have gone wherever he wanted. Rakim Felder, who I thought played a big role this past year, didn't have a lot of other big-time offers. You know, Martin, and I don't think I'm being critical of Martin when I say this, I think you would agree with the way he coaches and what he wants defensively. You have to find the right person. You can't just go out and take a recruit who's going to come in and go, man, this guy – very intense. I don't want to play for a guy like that. So Martin has to go find a particular recruit. He's done a great job of that, and that's what led to this team that he had this past year that's kind of more of a hard-nosed team. Mike Kotsar, again, is another guy who I don't really know even what other offers Kotsar had, but they weren't very big, but certainly comes in and starts the majority of the year. I do think this basketball team early on was Silver and Kotsar, Ibrahim Dumbia coming in, maybe Felipe Haas, I think is going to be a more front court oriented team early on, throwing it into Silva, who will know how to stay out of foul trouble, throwing it into Kotsar and allowing them to go to work. And then as the season progresses, seeing guys like Holden and Felder and maybe Beatty and Gravett taking more of a scoring and more of a dynamic impact on the offensive side of the ball type role.
Development with coaches is something we talk about a lot on this program. The lack of development, I think, with Darren Horn, the previous staff, was really a source of frustration for a lot of Gamecock basketball fans. Certainly, that has not been the case with Frank Martin in his 5 years at USC. I can't think of anyone who has stayed basically their entire career and has not obviously progressed from the first day they got in the program and continued on to play better basketball for the Gamecocks. You mentioned a Gamecock football recruiting story before the break. We need to hear some details on that, sir.
This, I think you'll like this story. I think you'll like this story. For a recruiting story, let me give it to you. This was on SEC Country. Mike Griffith wrote it. It is regarding Tennessee's newest offensive line signee, Kayron Calvert, who is 6'6", 315 pounds. South Carolina was actually the first school to offer him last year. They pushed very heavily. He ended up choosing his home state, Tennessee, over the Gamecocks in Florida. But late in the process, he didn't decommit, but he opened back up and he took an official visit to South Carolina for the Tennessee game. We all know how that game went. South Carolina won. It was probably their best game of the year. There's an article now. Again, it's seccountry.com. It's titled Next Generation, Kayron Calvert Aims to Make It Personal versus SEC Competition. They interviewed him, and here's what he had to say. Calvert came down for the South Carolina-Tennessee game to take an official visit. He says, the players were telling recruits, they were going to beat Tennessee that night. South Carolina players telling him. Calvert is quoted as saying, I was in the locker room because Coach Muschamp said, we're not going to feed you any bullcrap. What you see is what it is. I wasn't scared in the sense for my life, but I was scared because there were a lot of things going on in that locker room. Nothing illegal, just words being used. We're going to kill Tennessee. Really? It was like a riot. It was. Who was hungry enough to come out and take somebody's head off, like literally, like they really wanted to kill Tennessee, like slaughter everybody, Calvert said. It was a savage mentality. Calvert said it was something he will always remember and share with his new Tennessee teammates. I will make sure to make it personal. Have you ever heard of a kid?
Just to be clear here. He is in and out going to Tennessee because he thought South Carolina was too intense in its preparation and its pregame locker room mentality playing Tennessee that night.
Yes.
Is his first name Oscar and last name Meyer?
I mean, let me read this to you again. Calvert said game day started with South Carolina coaches and players telling the recruits they were going to beat Tennessee that night. Probably a good start to the recruiting strategy. It'd be very awkward if you're leading your recruiter on campus going, yeah, we probably aren't going to win tonight. And just don't come for the results.
Now, this really strikes me as a kid who like reads public comments. He's like, this is how coaches really are in real life. They say, we respect the other team. They're really well coached. This is the pregame locker room speech. Now, we respect them, and they're really well coached.
So, again, to read you the quote, Calvert says, I was in the locker room because Coach Muschamp said, we're not going to feed you any bullcrap. What you see is what it is. I wasn't scared in the sense for my life, which is good. That would be concerned.
That is good. That would be really weird. This guy is thinking about playing for Tennessee. What do you think?
You know this dude's got now has a target on his back, so when we play them.
I wasn't scared in the sense for my life, but I was scared because there were a lot of things going on in that locker room. Nothing illegal. Again, I like how he points that out. Good to know that, you know, South Carolina, the Muschamp guys weren't doing anything illegal. Like
I was worried. Goat, I really was.
You know, sacrificing a goat.
The live animals were hurting the making
like
of
Joe
this.
Joe Boo wasn't speech. In there. There wasn't a snake being, you know, waved in front of people. Nothing illegal. Just words being used. We're going to kill Tennessee. Calvert continues, really? It was like a riot. It was. Who was hungry enough to come out and take somebody's head off? Like, literally. Like, they really wanted to kill Tennessee. Like, slaughter everybody. It was a savage mentality. Calvert said it's something he will always remember and share with his new Tennessee teammates. I will make sure to make it personal.
Aren't you always taught, like, in what is it, kindergarten or something, use your words. Muschamp was using his words.
I just like what happened when he went on his official, when he went and saw Tennessee for their football. What were they doing in the locker room?
Did like classical music?
Like, yeah. Kumbaya. Mm-hmm.
Like Butch Jones. Champions of life gather around.
Okay. Danishes and tea before the game? Is that what they do?
Guys, I have an important message for you.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
And then they all shake hands like gentlemen. Have a good game, sir. You know you have a good game, sir.
I mean, I used to cover recruiting for a living. Like, that story, I've heard some stuff. Like, there are things My favorite one is Kalen Davis, the offensive lineman who was from, I think, Sherrall, who ended up going to Clemson. He was a big boy in high school. He was 353. He's a big, big kid. We were at Irmo High School, and he was weighing in, and some of the questions about him was his weight, and could he lose weight and get down to a proper playing weight for SEC or ACC. South Carolina had offered him. Clemson offered. He had a bunch of other offers. And I'll never forget, he goes and weighs himself, or they go and weigh him. They're doing one of those combines, and they weigh him in, and he comes back, and it was kind of, at that point, in terms of recruiting news, it was kind of interesting news. How much did Kalen Davis weigh in at? I think he was like 355, 358 or something. And I said, oh, okay, that's no problem. And he looks at me completely dead serious and goes, but they weighed me with my chain on. And I went, oh.
Oh, Barney.
I'll deduct 20 pounds for the chain. I don't. Like that, like, you know, because recruiting, some of that stuff is like, and he, and the, he, that was a very dead serious, like, if I'd have just taken the chain off, I'd have been closer to the 330 that everybody thinks I should be at. But on this particular day, I'm closer to 360. So, but this story by K'Ron Calvert, again, like, I know you're not really a recruiting guy and you kind of laugh at all, but that's got to, like, kind of,
good stuff.
That kind of raises an eyebrow, right?
Gamecock baseball, big comeback. Gamecock football loses out on a recruit that maybe it didn't want in the first place. And Gamecock basketball gets a commitment. That's how we start hour number two this morning, Bill. Do you approve of that open?
I do approve of that opening. Also, and I have questions about our intern who constantly forgets to close the door in the studio, and it makes me wonder if when he uses the bathroom around his roommates at his house, whether he closes the door or he just subjects everybody to what's going on. Because
interesting thought process, sir.
Constant ordeal here with the door. Like training a new puppy over there.
Is that what that's like?
I've only trained one puppy. I don't know. Welcome to my
house. Seemed like a good analogy. Welcome in, hour number two, all new early game. I'm Tim Hill. He's Bill Gunter. He's curious. He's got things to say.
I want to know more about your because you don't like the recruiting stuff. You don't like the recruiting stuff, and so I feel like this story. Not necessarily recruiting, because K'Ron Calvert already committed, already signed, will probably, I guess, be enrolling. Doesn't say when he will enroll on the campus of Tennessee, but it's a recruiting story. And
what do you mean already signed? So he signed on signing day back in February?
Yeah, he's done. He signed back in, he is.
So this is one of those interviews that a high school kid does, basically, before he goes to college, when he will get locked down and not be able to speak publicly. And he is basically writing the guidebook to why you don't give these interviews, because we are talking about him. He's a Tennessee commit, an offensive lineman, even at that, right? 6'6", 316 is what I saw. Mm-hmm. He's not an offensive lineman. I'm impressed with Tennessee's positions. But the quote, can you read the quote to start us off in hour number two? Just for fun, this guy came to visit.
Came on an official visit. It's K'Ron Calvert. Just again, background on him, 6'6", 315. He's an offensive tackle. South Carolina actually offered him first last summer.
Where's he from? He's from the state of Tennessee?
He's from Warren County High in McMinnville, Tennessee.
Okay.
All right, so he's from Tennessee. South Carolina offered him first. Florida, Tennessee ended up offering him as well. Ended up being a kind of a highly rated prospect. Chose Tennessee over South Carolina, Florida. But he took an official visit to South Carolina for the South Carolina-Tennessee game. Came down South Carolina, if you know about official visits. South kind of paid for him, put him up on campus and everything. Calvert said the game day started with South Carolina coaches and players telling the recruits they were going to beat Tennessee that night. Calvert is quoted as saying, I was in the locker room because Coach Muschamp said we're not going to feed you any bullcrap. What you see is what it is. I wasn't scared in the sense from my life, but I was scared because there were a lot of things going on in that locker room. Nothing illegal, just words being used. We're going to kill Tennessee. Calvert went on to say, really, it was like a riot. It was. Who was hungry enough to come out and take somebody's head off? Like, literally. Like, they really wanted to kill Tennessee. Like, slaughter everybody. It was a savage mentality. Calvert has gone on to say, it was something he will always remember and share with his new Tennessee teammates. I will make sure to make it personal, he said.
Good. Some Shepherd's Glass inbox reaction on that. Dirk hit us up at Tim Hill 107.5 is where he found me. You can find Bill at Will Gunter with one L. Maybe big boy football is not for him. You think? It's such an odd reaction.
I mean, one, if you're a South Carolina fan, aren't you like, yeah, all right, Muschamp's got him, like, I don't know, sacrificing goats in the locker room, and all right, it's really crazy in there. No wonder they were so fired up. Also makes me wonder how fired up the Clemson locker room was before the game. If South Carolina gets that fired up and Clemson played the way they did, like, what is Dabo Swinney doing in that locker room?
Well, it makes me wonder, like, the mentality that this kid is coming from, like, that was surprising to him, or something that was notable now later. Maybe
to take it personal.
Right, just playing devil's advocate. Maybe whoever was asking this question was obviously a Tennessee recruiting guy and kind of teeing it up for, you know, what other schools are you looking forward to playing? Or we saw that you know, it came down to Florida and South Carolina. Will you really want to beat them particularly or something? I don't know. I'm just trying to give this kid the benefit of the doubt. But that quote standing on its own is pretty hilarious. And it, to me, if I'm a Gamecock coaching staff member, I read that and I call my other coaches and say, nice work. Good job. Glad this guy didn't end up with us. We were doing the right things. This is the best compliment an opposing recruit, an opposing signee for another SEC school could ever give us.
Yeah, I've covered recruiting for a while. I've heard some interesting stories, but a kid almost being taken aback by, and remember, Tennessee, you and I talked about it the week of the game, and we knew there were injuries coming in, and we knew that things were going on with Tennessee. I can't remember. I think maybe you picked South Carolina to beat Tennessee. I can't remember. Picked Tennessee. Okay,
I picked them to beat Georgia.
All right,
previously,
and so you know, it was kind of one of
Gamecock
those.
Larry picked them to beat.
That's
Tennessee,
true. Gamecock Larry knew what was going on. Maybe that caught him off guard. Maybe he was driving in on Friday mm-hmm. morning, and that's what completely started the whole thing. Or maybe as he was driving through Dalton, Georgia, Gamecock Larry was outside with a sign, and that started everything, the downward spiral for his trip. But just kind of an odd recollection of a visit. Like, I've heard of bad visits. I've heard of bad official visits. I heard of an offensive lineman one time who came and hung out with players off campus,
mm-hmm.
and he just realized he didn't bond with the players, didn't really like being around some of the players, didn't think it was the type of atmosphere, and so he went to another school. Never heard of a kid coming in, looking at the locker room and going, little bit too intense for me. Not sure I want to be a part of that. That seems a little crazy that at that time, what South Carolina was, I think 3-4,
mm-hmm.
is getting really fired up to play a top 25 team. Not sure this is the place for me.
So I'm really interested to know what Will Muschamp might have thought about this. I got a couple of options for you. You tell me what you think Will Muschamp, his first thought was when he read this story. He's seen this quote.
I'm upbeat and encouraged.
That's option number one. Okay. And he did go out of the way. This Tennessee signee did go out of his way to say there was nothing illegal going on in the locker room.
We follow the rules here.
So that's something. And I'm guessing, actually, this response from Will Muschamp is the one that I'm probably guessing is very similar to the one I had after I read this quote.
Wow.
What do you think?
I'd go with the final option there.
That's odd to me. I'm sure Butch Jones probably has sat this young man down and given him his famous words.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's a championship of life.
So that's where we start this morning, hour number two.
Because he's got another quote in here. And if you just read this quote, you go, okay, Dad, that makes sense. Calvert says, he was coming down. He says, this is part of the article, the Vols were missing six starters despite coming off a bye week after a loss to Alabama. And Calvert said he noticed the team, regarding Tennessee, was not engaged on the sideline. Nothing like what he was seeing from the amped-up Gamecocks. So even he admits, like, Tennessee was kind of struggling. South Carolina looked really fired up. He goes on to say, when I went to Tennessee and they won their games, I felt like it was a win for me too, like I was already a part of the team. But when I went to South Carolina and they beat Tennessee, it hurt me too. That's when I knew Tennessee was the place I was going to be, because it bothered me. If that's the quote, and you take this from a recruit and you go, okay, the kid's a home right. state that Tennessee kid. Yeah, sure, you want to go to Tennessee. And you took an official visit, you gave South Carolina a chance, and you know what? Your school lost, and you feel bad about it, and you realize that was what. I totally get it. Talking about how you're going to make it personal because the locker room was a little bit too fired up, and they wanted to beat Tennessee because, That seems just, I don't know, that doesn't seem like the mentality that goes over real well on a Will Muschamp football team.
Do you think in the future that SEC schools think about who they let in their locker room pregame when they look at the offer sheet if you're playing another SEC school and they happen to be very much recruited by the other school? Clearly, Will Muschamp has done this forever, and it's obviously wasn't an issue for him last year.
I don't think that. No, you don't worry about that at all. Like, you get the kid on your campus. Thing I've always heard coaches say, no, regardless of who he's committed to or what's going on in his recruitment, get him on campus. That's the first step. And then work that relationship and show him what you have to offer, and who knows what happens. In this case, what South Carolina had to offer, which is an exciting, apparently over-the-top atmosphere in the locker room, not exactly what K'Ron Calvert looking for.
Gamecock baseball up a couple of spots in the latest RPI after last night's 10-7 come-from-behind win against Liberty. USC now 24 in the RPI. I'm looking at warrennolan.com. Also, the number one strength of schedule, the Gamecocks right now in the country, headed to Missouri. Missouri, by the way, number 71 in this same RPI system. Missouri 9-15 in SEC play. The Gamecocks 11-13. Will be very interesting to see what happens this weekend in the SEC's other Columbia. Other Gamecock news, basketball commitment from Justin Manaya, 6'6 guard, the fifth member of this recruiting class now. He's a late member, and the Gamecocks might even add another one. Right now, USC is one scholarship over its 13 scholarship limit and could possibly go another one, and that could mean at least a transfer or two for Frank Martin's and his squad.
Not the only basketball news coming out yesterday regarding South Carolina. Per WLTX, South Carolina will – actually, I shouldn't say South Carolina will open the season. Wofford will open their brand-new arena by hosting South Carolina. So the Gamecocks and Frank Martin, that's probably going to be, I would assume, maybe the season opener. Maybe it's just the season opener for Wofford. But the Gamecocks will open up Wofford's new arena. So look, kudos to Frank Martin. I'm a big fan of Dave Odom used to do this, and I thought it was really a great thing. I think Odom did it. I don't know if Fogler did it before him. But each year to play one game around the state at like the Citadel or at Furman. Darren Horde tried to do it. It didn't go well for him because he kept losing those games. But I love that. You know, you take your team up and maybe you go, or you take your team down to Charleston and you play the Citadel, or you play College of Charleston, you go up and you play Wofford, you go play Furman, you go to those small venues. I think it's a great experience. Plus, it gives your fans a chance that maybe always can't make the drive down. So, big fan of that. Now, with that being said, the way Mike Young coaches that basketball team and the way they play, that's going to be a challenge for a team that loses Dozier and Thornwell. And is trying to find itself in the opener, because you know Mike Young's going to have those boys ready to go up there. Mm-hmm. He does a great job with that program.
But that's what you need. I think that's what we're finally seeing, especially in the SEC. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that those non-conference cupcake wins early on in the season get you nothing come tournament time.
Right.
But you play a solid team that has NCAA tournament experience in their program anyway. I think I'm all for that as well. I think it works for everyone. It works for people in the upstate. And even if South Carolina were to lose that game, it works for them because they'll learn much more about their team in that kind of game than they would, say, who used to come here all the time back in the day.
Yeah,
just plug in your non-conference opponent. Louisiana Tech was actually a pretty good one last year. Monmouth was a good one last year. And we saw, I think, at the end of the season, those types of experiences paying off for Gamecock basketball. Wanted to get into today's poll question. At Sim Hill 107.5, by the way, speaking of basketball, asking you simply, which sports athletes do you have the most respect for? Coming off a couple of game sevens last night in hockey, the NBA playoffs in full swing at this point, and obviously baseball getting really going, really picking up and coming down the home stretch here for college baseball, but big league baseball, interesting. Jackie Bradley Jr., by the way, the former Gamecock, with a home run last night, his second of the season. He went 2-for-4 in a 7-4 loss for the Red Sox to the Milwaukee Brewers. So you have four options on the poll question on Twitter, at Tim Hill 107.5. The sports, very simple, baseball, basketball, football, or hockey. More than 60 votes in already, and football leading the way with 49% of the early vote. You seem a bit surprised or perturbed by this so far this morning.
I think it's hockey. I don't think there's any question about it. The physical nature of hockey and the fact that you play 82 games, like, I get it. Football, I think, is the natural answer to that. I think that football is certainly a very NFL football, certainly a very, very physical sport, and we're seeing the repercussions of injuries later in life, and we're even seeing guys walking away from the career from a career in the NFL earlier because of concerns about just how violent the game is, and that's kind of where we were going with that poll question. But man, I mean, you talk about hockey being on those skates, doing it 82 games a year. It ain't like hockey's, you know, you're out there hitting each other with feathers. That's a physical, physical sport. And I think you're seeing some of the repercussions on Sidney Crosby now, who's struggling in the playoffs and having concussion issues. I voted hockey because I think the way that game is played, the athleticism, if you've ever tried to skate, I think I'm a fairly athletic person, even at my age. Like a baby deer on ice, trying to ice skate. Like, I got legs going places, arms flailing. Usually I end up on my nose. It's a bad situation. I think in our state, because a lot of people don't go down here during the winter and do the ice skating that they have the little rink set up, you don't realize how difficult it is. A lot of people think, oh, yeah, I can just get out on a, you know, I just like rollerblading. No, it's difficult. And then you add in the physical aspect of it, and you add in the fact that it's 82 games. I voted hockey.
Timothy Merriman agrees with you, sir. Says, reason being, most people can pick up any ball and play, baseball, basketball, etc. Not everyone can skate, and fighting is expected.
Yes. Also, another part of that.
Also, in the playoffs, you don't the rule is you don't tell anyone you're hurt. You don't let that right. information out, and guys are playing hurt all the time. Couple of game sevens in the NHL last night. The Pittsburgh Penguins knock off the Washington Capitals, and they'll move on and try to win. They stay alive with a chance to win back-to-back Stanley Cups. Over in the West Coast, Anaheim, a winner late last night, 2-1, a comeback win over Edmonton. So Anaheim, a Game 7 winner as well. In the NBA, Boston Celtics blow out the Washington Wizards, 123-101. I saw the stat pop up here just a second ago. In their 9 games this season, including the regular season, the home team has won every single game, which I think explains your diagnosis, your evaluation, your analysis of the NBA playoffs so far to this point, that they stink, because there are a lot of teams that are like that are pretty good at home, Celtics and the Wizards, except that when they go on the road, they can't win a game. And when you have Cleveland and Golden State sweeping their way through the first couple of series, first two teams to do that since 1989, it seems pretty obvious to everyone paying attention at this point that those are going to be the two teams who end up in the finals. But maybe that will make for great conference finals if one of these teams, either Boston or Washington on the east, or over in the west, Houston or San Antonio, can surprise us and upset the favorites on the road.
Well, no, I mean, it really doesn't have nothing to do with home and road.
Whoa, I'm sorry. It doesn't have nothing to do with it.
It doesn't have anything to do with being at home or on the road. I'm just going back to the last 8 days. The last 8 days, going back to May 3rd. You look at the scores of these aren't close games. They're really awful. They're non-competitive games. I mean, 125-103, 121-96, 116-89, 115-104, 115-94, 103-92. That's 6 straight games with double-digit victories. 7 straight. Golden State beating Utah 102-91. You finally get a relatively close one. Cleveland on Sunday won by 7 over Toronto. But then you had 2 other blowouts that day. Washington by 19 over Boston. Houston by 21 over San Antonio. Monday night, we had Golden State winning by 26 over Utah. You finally got the best game of the entire playoffs, an overtime game between San Antonio and Houston on Tuesday night. It has nothing to do with home versus away. It has everything to do with the competitiveness of the games. These things are out of control early on. I think you mentioned last night, and I'll pull it back up, at halftime, I think Boston was up 16 or 15. I mean, these have not been competitive games. One team wins by 15 to 20 points every game. I don't care who wins. I don't care where they win. I care for competitive games. That's kind of what made the first round of the hockey playoffs. And I get it. We've talked a lot of hockey the last few weeks. But reason being is the first round had more overtime games, 17, than any other first round period in hockey's history. There was more overtime. Hockey's at least been competitive. I think baseball, generally, you get competitive games. The NBA playoffs, the problem is we've got nothing that's been competitive.
Oh, we need to get a sound effect for a gas baggy hot take. He's fired up. Bill Gunter on the NBA playoffs.
Feel good about that one, too.
Or lack thereof. Another write-in vote, or our first write-in vote, I should say, on today's poll question at Tim Hill 107.5. Richard Freeman hit me up, and he says, rugby is football and hockey with no pads. I see football with no pads. Where's the hockey part?
Yeah, there's no sticks.
See a fight, maybe?
There's no goals.
There's no helmets. There's no skates.
I mean, I see what he's saying. There are the goals, collisions.
It looks a lot more like football without pads to me.
Australian football.
That's just me. The poll question out there right now, which sports athletes do you respect more? Baseball, basketball, football, or hockey? Bill says hockey. So far, most of the voters going with football this morning. Write-in vote for from Albert. Says international soccer. It takes a lot of guts to fake an injury, cry like a baby, and then pop up like nothing happened. Excellent contribution there, Albert. Completely agree with that. Now, I guess it just depends on what you respect more at this point, right? Because in football, it's so specialized. I have a lot more respect for a linebacker than I do for a kicker, right? Have a lot more respect for...
I don't know, man. We had a lot of respect for those kickers. They figured out the easiest line of work, if there is such a title, for the NFL.
Mm-hmm. From an endurance standpoint, there's not a lot of endurance typically for a football player, right? Especially a lineman.
Right.
Compared to basketball, for instance. Especially basketball. You got pads on. So you got pads on in football. You got pads on in hockey. No pads in basketball, which if you've ever been on the floor for a high-level basketball game, that's one of the first things that caught my eye. I remember going to my first college basketball game, I think, when I was middle school. It was the first time I ever sat really close to one. It was High Point University, which is certainly mid-major or low mid-major, but just seeing the intensity and how physical the game was up close and personal really kind of took me aback. I was used to watching, 10-year-olds play, and you just kind of run around and you throw it and there's very little contact on purpose anyway. And maybe people trip and fall down, and that's about it. But, man, big boy college basketball. And then you go up to these guys in the NBA who are just physical specimens, and who, especially if you're down low or in the paint or something, doing it 82 times a night or 82 times a season, the travel that they go through, the wear and tear on their bodies, and then doing it year after year. A guy like LeBron James, for instance, at this point in his career. I have a lot of respect for a guy like that, for basketball players in general. Now, that respect is different when it comes to baseball. Baseball is a different type of fatigue and challenge, especially the challenge of hitting a 92-mile-an-hour slider, for instance, mm-hmm. or the split-finger fastball from Mariano Rivera back in the day. The mental challenge you have of going through a slump and just playing every single day and failing time after time after time, it makes me respect baseball players a bunch. But from a physical standpoint, you go stand out in the outfield for a while. It's not much. Yeah. It doesn't really compare to football or hockey from that standpoint.
Well, I think with basketball, I go back to the Sam Cassell quote. I mean, I think most people know basketball players for about 3/4 of the season are pretty, they're taking it pretty lightly.
You're talking about the NBA, right?
Yeah, talking about the NBA. So you start with the NBA. They're taking it. I mean, look, I'm not saying that they're cashing it in, but they're out there kind of, I mean, Sam Cassell and that John Calipari 30 for 30 is like, I might dive for a loose ball, might dive in a regular season game in the fourth quarter, not doing it in the first quarter, and definitely not in a preseason game. Now, that's the exact quote, but the point being is those guys during the season...
Cruise control.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
I mean,
they're on cruise.
It's basically cruise. So I think with that being said, I eliminate basketball. Baseball, to me, what you just said is the mental aspect. It's the longest season, 162 games. I mean, you're playing 5 to 6 games a week. The travel involved in it, the games, the days involved. I've heard of reporters, and I know people say, oh, sad journalist reporters, but you go to the ballpark at like 12 to get the pre-interviews, to do the batting practice, and the game's at 7. It's a long, long day for baseball players. It's not just, well, ball game's at 7, go rolling into the clubhouse at 6 o'clock, throw on the cleats, throw on the jersey, let's get out there, a few swings, and hey, we're ready to rock and roll. It ain't Little League anymore. You're at the ballpark from 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, whether you're on the road or you're at home, until that game ends, and then you got to go home and get up and do it again. You're exactly right. The toll that takes, both mentally and physically, is a lot, and the 162-game season. Football, obviously the most physically violent sport. The injuries were, again, there's no doubt denying what we're seeing coming out with concussions and all the things that are happening, the players giving up the sport. But still, to me, the one that I voted for is hockey, because it's not as physical as football, but it's not far behind. skating is extremely difficult, and now you're adding in the element of an 82-game season where you're going three, sometimes four nights a week, and you're having to get out there and getting busted up and bumped around, and that to me is by far what those guys go through is absolutely – I think it's over football when you – it's on top of football when you talk about the – both the season, the mental, and the physical aspect of it.
I got a story about baseball that it just reminded me of when you were talking about when they go into the ballpark and how long a day it can be. I'll get to that in a second. First, wanted to give you some reaction to me. The Shepherd's Glass inbox from AK says, hockey hands down. They are on ice, he says.
Yes, not very soft.
That is true. Let's get out to the Capital Hyundai, Capital Chevrolet phone lines. 404-6100 is where Bill gave us a shout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
What do you think? Who do you have the most respect for?
I'm probably the only person in the Columbia area to have this right in the boat, but professional bicyclist without the performance enhancing stuff, BPO and all that, those guys ride bicycles on skinny tires at 25, 30 miles an hour. They crash. They get hooked. Yeah, they go through all that long hours of training, all that stuff, travel venues and all that. They have to go through sort of like a minor league, just like baseball, to pay their dues to get up to that category of level. And then, you know, they're on a bicycle, that skinny seat, all that for 6-8 hours a day. And so, I mean, I think Lance Armstrong kind of blew this out of the water with all his shenanigans. But anyway, guys like Hincapie and all those, you know, they pay their dues so that guys like Armstrong could win. So, anyway, that's my take, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Y'all have a wonderful day. God bless you.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the phone call. Professional cyclists. Out of all the sports, that's where Bill goes. Okay, well, that's our first George Hincapie reference on the program. The upstate native, Tour de France, solid performances through the years. That took you by surprise, Bill? I wasn't expecting that one. Rugby didn't take me by that much surprise. The second write-in vote being for professional cyclist, that one took me by surprise. Gabby hit us up this morning and goes with gymnast. That's who she has the most respect for when it comes to sports. The intern did not approve of that. He looked like he just ate something like sour milk. But I understand watching the Olympics recently, seeing what kind of physical things that they can do. I understand where Gabby's coming from on that one. To me, where it falls short is that there's no ball involved. You know
or
what I mean?
With cycling?
With the cycling and the gymnast both. Mm-hmm. Like these other sports that we're talking about, very physical, as well as having the hand-eye coordination, and you have to have the communication with the team all worked in. That's why they made our list, I think, and they're the traditional team sports here. What are you looking up over there?
This is straight off of cyclingnews.com, Tim, for this weekend's event for I think this is in a different language, so I struggle enough with English. But it's the Four Tours de Dunkirk, appears to be what it is. The Nord Pass.
I'm sorry.
It's a different language, Jen. I can't figure everything out here.
Okay.
Matter of fact, it's four, the number four, and then J-O-U-R-S. I'm going to go with that's tours in another language. De Dunkirk. The Tour de Nord Pass de Calais. It's a road event. And if you're wondering, the UCI code is 2.1. That's cyclingnews.com is where I'm drawing this information
at least
from.
Tell me where it is.
Dunkirk.
Is Lou Bijette going to be stealing that from you?
Clearly.
Just so you guys know, earlier this week, last weekend, the U.S. Marathon National Championships took place. It was a mountain bike event in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. I can read that one. Next week is the Amigans Women's Race in California.
Anthony, please get us back on track on the Capital Hyundai, Capital Chevrolet phone lines. I would appreciate that. Good morning.
Morning. Hello?
Yes, sir. We got you.
Yes, I want to comment on the physicality of the two sports. Mm-hmm. I think the NFL by far, from a mental standpoint and a physical standpoint, is better than, it's more so trolling than hockey. I think even from an X and O standpoint, the NFL got them. And from a physical standpoint, if you can only play one game a week, I mean, you know, there's no question about which one is the most physical. So I think the NFL got them all beat. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the phone call, Anthony. I think the one game a week kind of gives more credence to the hockey argument, because you have to play more than just once a week. You get a little bit more rest. Now, as far as the violence of the collisions, I think we'll all agree that football is at the top, correct?
Right.
You're with me on that, right?
Right.
But the frequency of physical confrontations and then the likelihood that you're going to square off with someone with your fists certainly rises when you're talking about hockey, and the endurance that you have to have, I think, is where I give hockey a nod too there. But you also see a bunch of substitutions, by the way. If you only watch on TV, sometimes you can miss those. But if you go to a hockey game in person, you see it all the time, shuffling in and out. So guys are only going a couple of minutes at a time, as opposed to basketball, where these guys are playing 38 minutes a night. I think that's where the endurance really comes in, and basketball gets the nod over these other sports.
Yeah, I'm just glancing.
Except maybe cycling.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, you know, I'm just kind of glancing real quick. I'm looking at the Penguins roster, because as much as I've enjoyed the hockey, have not paid enough attention. But it looks like average height and weight about 6'1", 200, 205. So obviously, not, you do have some larger guys. There's one guy, Tom Cecito, for the one of the left wings, 6'5", 230. I mean, that's pretty, he runs into you in hockey. That one's going to sting a little bit. Well, you're going to feel that one for a day or two.
They have the enforcers.
Well, they do have,
they're not nearly as specialized as football is, but there are one or two guys on every team that they're bigger and they're there to enforce.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Just glancing again, I'm looking at I picked a roster. I'm looking at the Penguins roster. Everybody between about 170 and 210 is about, you get the one guy. The one guy is the biggest guy on the team. 230 is what I mentioned. So, but I'm with you, having to go back and forth there, playing 3 to 4 nights a week in hockey. Look, I agree with you. The most violent sport, without a doubt, is football. Some of the collisions, and then if you're an offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, obviously running into each other on every play.
I think Josh would disagree with you. He just gave a write-in vote on the Shepherd's Glass inbox for UFC Ultimate Fighting. You'll mix martial arts.
True, but
that's,
I mean,
violent.
That's a violent mess. I mean, how do you compare that when you're talking about fighting? And I don't know how often they fight, but I think it's like once every 4 months. Like, you do a fight and then you train.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know some of those guys will fight more frequently to build up the resume, to build up their record, and to kind of get exposure. I get that. But certainly, I think if we're talking like, and then part of this was the season aspect of it.
Right.
Part of the poll question was the season aspect of it, talking about going through the entire season, 162 games in baseball, 82 in hockey and basketball, 16 in football.
Preston, another write-in vote, bull riding. Got to tell you, I did not see these coming.
All right, we're rocking and rolling this morning.
You know, Bill calls us up and says his vote is for cycling. That's who he gives the most respect to, the sport he gives the athletes the most respect to. And then here on SportsCenter, right in front of us, my buddy Matt Berry in this morning on ESPN shows us a cyclist who was celebrating after what he thought was winning, except there was another lap left in the race he was doing. I think the field caught him. It can't be.
Tough sport. Tough sport. All right, so we might have learned something about me this morning. I don't know if you guys were aware of this. My French is not all that good, mainly because, you know, you never took it.
How does it compare to your English?
Slightly better.
Sounds about right.
A little bit improved. Meredith weighs in, and I'm going to mess this up again, but your, I believe, or tour, I'm not sure. Your is, actually, I think I can get it, jour. Jour is day in French, a la soup de jour. Come on, Bill. And then my wonderful sister, who was listening this morning, sent me a text message that had the emoji of the monkey with its eyes closed and said, oh my goodness.
That's actually the one that comes to mind frequently when I'm listening to the
show.
And
then Johnny weighs in, and he's got, I believe these are the Muppet characters, the guy with the spiky orange hair and the big nose, and then the French guy. And he says, apparently, I was separated at birth.
I think you and I were separated at birth.
Is that what he's going for?
I don't know.
Okay. Wee-wee.
Maserati hitting us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox at Tim Hill 107.5 says hockey's got to be the most physical sport, moving at like 30 miles an hour into a head-on collision at times and with smaller pads at that. Chad Morris also saying hockey, the average game, broken bones, knocked out teeth, stitches, fights, and a frozen molded rubber puck going 100 miles per hour at your head.
I'm with you on that.
Let's hear what Barry has to say via the Capital Hyundai, Capital Chevrolet phone lines. Good morning, Barry.
Hey, good morning.
just the question was most respected professional athlete, correct?
No, sir. We didn't go professional. Just which sports athletes do you respect more?
Okay. Well, and keeping it on a professional level, then I respect all of them, from golfers down to, you know, what a golfer has to go through when Jordan Spieth is looking at an 8-foot putt to win a tournament that could change his life. I look at it more from who's the best all-around athlete. And with that said, I think the nod would have to go to basketball. They just has to do so much dexterity, the wind, you know, the being in shape and what have you. But also with that said, I think the hardest thing to do in all the sports is hit a baseball. You know, you fail 7 out of 10 times and you're a millionaire in the Hall of Fame. But I think the best all-around athletes from, you know, just everything we think of athletically, I would have to go basketball.
I think I'm with you on that one, Barry. And right now, we're certainly in the minority. Only 10% of our voters, more than 100 in, going basketball. Football continues to dominate with 52% of the vote. Bill, you're in third place. Baseball's in second.
Yeah, it didn't look good for us. That's what I told the team. You know, we're playing against a really good team down 6-1, and things didn't look good. And they got some guys that can throw pretty well. So momentum turned, and that was good for us. And maybe give us a little bit more confidence offensively that we can bang a few balls and put up a big inning.
Chad Holbrook after last night's 10-7 win at home over Liberty. The Gamecocks back-to-back non-conference wins this week. One was even more difficult than last night's come-from-behind win. The Tuesday night game against Presbyterian, a 4-3 win. A walk with the bases loaded, giving the Gamecocks the win in that one. And last night, a big performance from the Gamecock hitters, getting to double digits on offense for the first time in more than a month. Certainly giving the Gamecock players and the coaches, I think, some confidence headed into this weekend. Some much-needed confidence, I will say, in a huge series. Missouri, their RPI 71 right now, which is less than last night's Liberty team that came into Founders Park. The Gamecocks moving up a couple of spots with their win last night, up to 24 in the latest RPI. They also have the number one strength of schedule in the country to this point. Now, both of those numbers I anticipate going down unless the Gamecocks just go, how many games we got? 7 left, is that correct? 7 left in the regular season. Mm-hmm. If Carolina was to go 7-0, maybe they stay right there with series sweeps against Missouri and Georgia and a win against USC Upstate. But even with that, I think their RPI might dip a little bit. That just seems to be how the RPI works. Strength of schedule will also obviously dip with not the best opponents left as far as RPI, opposing RPIs. Missouri's the highest right now at 71 in the country. So right now, clearly, squarely on the bubble, the Gamecocks. Want to remind you that last year's North Carolina team had an RPI of 20, I think, but because of ACC struggles, they didn't make the NCAA tournament. The Gamecocks end up at 500 or better. They go 4-2 or better. Then I think they get into the NCAA tournament, and I think it's largely in part due to the reputation. I think they might get a slight benefit of the doubt that Clark Schmidt is injured. I don't know. But we'll see what happens here in the coming weeks with the Gamecocks in the NCAA tournament as far as that goes. But again, last night, certainly a good sign. You get some home runs from guys who haven't hit home runs. Danny Blair with his first career home run. Riley Hogan, another freshman with a home run. And Carlos Cortez, a freshman who has really stepped up his game in SEC play. The Gamecocks feeling a little bit better about themselves headed into the home stretch of their regular season. A guy like Alex Destino, by the way, we'll hear his comment here in a second, but he walked 5 times last night. And this is a guy who has struggled with swinging at pitches outside the strike zone. So he seems to be dialed in a little bit more. These are all good signs heading into the stretch run. Now, whether or not the Gamecocks can do what they did when they won 11 out of 12 games kind of in the first third of the season there, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and you need positive momentum. They at least have that right now, but they've got to go on the road and show the ability to close some games down.
Because that's been the issue, right? And then the last 2 games, that's actually what they've done.
Well, again, this is not – South Carolina is a talented team, and we've talked about that. They've underachieved this year. They've lost 6 straight SEC series. They've lost them to good teams. But you know what? South Carolina's supposed to be a good team, too. They're supposed to win some of those. I don't think anybody's expecting them to win all 6 SEC series, but they shouldn't be any worse than 3-3 in those overall series. Now you face two weaker teams in conference. Missouri's 9-15 overall in conference play. Georgia's really struggling. So you have opportunities here now to boost your win total and improve your standings for the NCAA tournament. I'm kind of with you. I really don't see how this team should be in the NCAA tournament. But with that being said, I think that if they go 4-2 down over the next, or 5-2 over the next seven games, it'll be interesting to see how much the committee would put on Hoover, a place where South Carolina's really struggled. I mean, really, really struggled. If they go to Hoover and they don't get out, they go 0-2 and they're done, and that's the end of that. I'd be interested to see how the committee views that. A lot of variables here, and you mentioned North Carolina last year. North Carolina has a great baseball reputation. I mean, that's a school that, again, you mentioned the RPI, very high.
But no national championships attached to that program. Now, they played for it several times.
So, you know, I don't know. It'll be very entertaining to see how it comes down. It's all a moot point if South Carolina goes out and loses this series this weekend. There's no reason they should be in the NCAA tournament if they lose the series this weekend. You've got to take two of three from Missouri.
And I think Gamecock players, coaches, they understand where they are right now. I've heard Chad Holbrook talk about the RPI, the strength of schedule this week. They have a good understanding of what they need to do, I think, going down the stretch. Now, they've had a good understanding the entire time of what they need to do to compete in the SEC, and they've fallen short in six straight series. So will be very interesting to see what happens in that other Columbia in the SEC this weekend. Former Gamecocks in the big leagues last night, by the way, Jackie Bradley Jr. with a home run, 2-for-4, and a 7-4 loss to the Milwaukee Brewers. The Red Sox dropped to 17-16 on the season. Jackie Bradley Jr., his second home run of the year, ups his average to just 194. Fellow former Gamecock Justin Smoak with a double last night for the Toronto Blue Jays. They had a walk-off win against the Cleveland Indians, 8-7, that final score. Toronto also struggling this year, up to just 13-21 on the season. That's a couple of games better than the Braves, who lost 4-2 to the Houston Astros. Freddie Freeman did hit his 12th home run. That's just one off the Major League Baseball lead right now. And by the way, former Gamecock Jordan Montgomery will pitch against Houston tomorrow for the New York Yankees, looking to go 3-1 on the season. The Yankees going to retire Derek Jeter's number on Sunday. I'm guessing if I'm Jordan Montgomery, Bill, I would prefer that whole thing to go down not on the day that I'm starting. I'm good with that happening on Sunday and not the day that I start. That's a lot of pomp and circumstance to go with that.
Yeah, and Montgomery's been, man, he's solid so far. I mean, is off to starting to really cement a place in that rotation. And the Yankees are hot. We're hot right now, Tim. We're hot.
No, oh boy.
Just waiting to give it to Jen's Cubs again.
By the way.
Put you in a headlock and give you a noogie. How about that, huh? How do you like that, Cubbies? Take some of that.
Please don't respond, Jen.
Yeah, what do you like, huh? You like that? Did you like some of that last weekend? Want some more?
You cannot be serious!
Which sports athletes do you have the most respect for? That's the poll question today. Well done, Jen. That's an equally appropriate response. Right now, football under 50%. They're down to 49% in our poll at Tim Hill, 107.5. Hockey, still one percentage point behind baseball, Bill. So you're still in third place, and my basketball is in a distant last place, even though Travis hit us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox. He just hit me up on email. Feel free to do that as well. Tim.Hill@Cumulus.com. He says, I'm going to go with you on the poll, go with basketball, but if I could write one in, I'd go with rugby. Another vote for rugby. Interesting. Some clarification in from earlier. By the way, Robert kind of gave you a pity vote. He said, I'll write in golf. He says, by the time I'm on the back nine, I'm exhausted. Couldn't imagine playing four rounds on a weekend or Thursday through Sunday, but he says maybe that's because I hit it 30 to 40 more times than the pros do every round.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that does have a lot to do with it. Christopher clarifying, he's the one who said he grew up in Minnesota playing hockey, baseball, and football, I believe. He said he started playing hockey at four, played through high school in Minnesota.
Yeah, guy's a professional. I mean, that guy, when he weighs in with opinion, I'm paying attention on hockey.
He did not say he was a professional, by the way.
He doesn't have to. I'm standing up for him.
Stuart hit us up with just decathlon, question mark? No. No is my response to that.
It's not a season.
Well, we didn't ask about a season. We just asked about which sports athletes
that's pretty tough,
you
though,
respect.
Man. You got to run, you got to bike, and you got to swim.
But it's not a sport, right? It's an event, but it's a series of events, right?
Okay.
So I guess you could describe yourself as a decathlete to people.
They could.
I'd never heard that happen in my life.
I mean, I can swim, run, and bike. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, that's not a decathlon.
What is it?
Oh, boy.
Is that the one where you throw and you run and you shoot the javelin?
So we've gotten French in on the program, and now I got to explain Latin to this guy here. We'll do it during the break.
You know, Latin.
I'll spare you the details on that one.
Although I like the segment where I get to speak more French. That was pretty good. A lot of good feedback on that. You can call me a bad sports talk show host, only if you want to.
I do not listen to you.
I've definitely never been walked five times, maybe three at the most in a game. So, I mean, it was kind of different. I mean, I felt like I was watching that game for the most. I mean, it sounds weird, but I honestly felt like I was watching it. So, a lot of good things happened tonight. A lot of young guys stepped up, which is awesome. So, having an offensive explosion at this point in the season, going into Missouri, and they always have good arms, it's good for us.
Alex Destino, the Gamecock slugger, after last night's 10-7 win against Liberty, where he said he swung one time. That's a solid game. That's good for the on base percentage, by the way, getting on base five times in a ball game. That is the goal. Get on base however you can. Destino doing it, and Chad Holbrook talking about his junior slugger, who he didn't even play in that Kentucky series a while back, says he's now figured out that you got to swing at pitches just in the strike zone. When he does that, he's a much more effective hitter, and that's where he's gotten himself here. Three home runs in four games, I think he was, after a home run against Presbyterian the other night. So Destino helping the middle of the Gamecocks lineup get some confidence for sure as they roll into the Missouri series, the first time they've gotten to double digits on offense in more than a month. So we'll see how that affects Carolina this weekend in that big Missouri series. Our poll question today asking you, which athlete sport do you have the most respect for? At last check, baseball in second place. Big Dog hitting me up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox. He did it just via email, tim.hill@cumulus.com. He says, I got to give respect to soccer players, continuous running, dangerous fights, all for a few points. That is the first vote for soccer players.
Yeah, occasionally.
Occasionally, but I mean, compared to like hockey fights, nothing. Mm-hmm. And Albert hit us up earlier and said sarcastically, "Yeah, rolling around and acting like you're hurt, and then popping right back up."
Oh, that was just a lot of respect. Cheap shot at hockey. I mean, soccer.
Jim hits me up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox and Bill just said, "Shoot the javelin!" Ha ha. So Jim is listening very closely, much to probably.
I'm surprised you and Jim really didn't catch more of that one.
At some point, all we hear, I think, is more of the
Swedish chef.
No, this is kind of what I hear sometimes, especially when you didn't understand decathlon.
I got him confused.
What is a decathlon now? Did you figure it out?
Give me 2 seconds.
Oh, no. He's going to his iPad. The intern in here who took Latin for 5 years is really, I mean, you might be killing his spirit for his entire professional future. So,
hey, somebody want to spell decathlon for me?
Oh boy,
decath.
D E K.
Bill didn't laugh at that. I don't know why.
That's what I thought. Uh-huh.
The intern got a kick out of that. Deca, sir.
Yeah.
Ten.
Uh-huh.
Ten events.
It'll just pop up at some point.
They're not even listening. Okay. Michael A. Lewis hit me up this morning. Shepherd's Glass inbox says a typical hockey shift, about 50 seconds. They essentially sprint the whole time, get gassed, sit out, and repeat. It's a good point, and that's one of the reasons why I don't give hockey the benefit of the doubt that you do, sir. Matt B. hits us up and says most top-line hockey players only play 20 to 24-ish minutes per game. Still the most demanding sport to play, according to Matt B. Nick Thompson went with best stamina athletes in the world are UFC fighters, hands down. I hear what he's saying from a strength and stamina combination, but you can't say the best stamina. I mean, that has to be marathon runners, right? Or these ultra marathon runners, these ridiculous dudes who run hundreds of miles at a time. I think that's the most stamina. But with the strength and going, like competing with another person one-on-one, I hear what you're saying, Nick. I don't disagree with you necessarily, but did make our list today of the traditional American team sports. Salvador says he was laughing at the soccer one. That's fair enough. Dustin hits us up. Do you think Tyler Johnson is struggling mentally right now? He's just not there right now. So he went in the game last night for the Gamecocks and could not close things out. I think Chad Holbrook was hoping that he would put him in to close things out against Liberty, and that would give his preseason All-American closer some confidence going in to the weekend series. Unfortunately, that kind of backfired for him. Right. Reed Scott had to eventually come in and nail that down for the Gamecocks. The line last night for Tyler Johnson, four batters faced, one hit, two walks in one third of an inning.
Yeah, they need him. They're going to need him for this weekend. You're going to need the back end of that bullpen, Bowers and Reagan. And,
well, that's been the biggest surprise this year, right? Carolina's hitting, I think, 268 as a team, and I think we're going to hear Chad Holbrook talk about his team and why he still wants to bunt is one of the reasons that their batting average isn't so high. So he feels like he has to get guys in scoring position for this team to score run. So not being an offensive juggernaut is certainly a bit of a surprise this year. But I think the biggest surprise is what we've seen out of a guy like Tyler Johnson, who pitched for the Team USA collegiate team in the offseason, has hit 100 miles per hour on the radar gun this year, but is struggling right now. And it certainly has contributed to the Gamecocks' struggles this year, not being able to come up with big wins in the SEC when they needed them. Johnson's injury issues certainly have played into that too.
Yeah, I mean, as a team, I think Chad Holbrook would agree with this. It's underperforming. It's the back end of the bullpen with Bowers and Reagan, and obviously Johnson, who's been injured. And then, you know, I thought the only group that was performing up to what we expected, and then you've had some injuries, but was the starting pitching with Schmidt and Clark, and then you had Adam Hill. I thought those guys were exactly what we kind of expected to get at the beginning of the season. But other than that, everybody else has been maybe a little below the expectation that we had for them when we started February.
He's Bill Gunner. I'm Tim Hill. Again, our poll question up at Tim Hill 107.5 about which sports athletes do you have the most respect for? Rooster P wants to weigh in via the Capital Hyundai Capital Chevrolet phone lines. Somewhere in these here United States on the road in his truck. Where are you, sir?
Good morning. Oh, excuse me. I just crossed in from Missouri into Illinois over here by St. Louis.
Mm.
The most respect for that I have for a team sport is rugby. Absolutely. Violent game, tough game, hard game, grueling. Please, people, quit throwing soccer out there, that glorified game of kickball. The most violent sport? Absolutely. UFC, period, hands down. Most violent. Hockey, there you go. Pretty tough. Got to dodge that thing coming at you there. That puck, man, that 100-mile-an-hour puck coming at you be pretty intimidating. I don't know, guys. It's kind of a weird question because when you say the most respect, I thought to myself, oh, I don't know. How am I going to do this? Most respect from a physical and mental. Baseball is mental. Golf is a mental. So, you know, I'm looking at it from a lot of different ways, so I'll just throw my vote in. But how about that?
All right. Sounds like we gave him something to think about while he's driving this morning. Kept him occupied.
Yeah, there's always something to think about while I'm driving, dodging everybody.
Be careful out there.
What was his vote in for?
Rugby.
Okay, it's a write-in vote.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
We have gotten a lot of votes for rugby. I seriously wonder, and it's not. I don't know if backyard tackle football, you know, as you were kind of growing up, is considered rugby because you know how those games kind of well, at least ours did, mainly because I might have been a little bit smaller than everybody else, and maybe I was kind of fun to tackle and plant into the ground, but. Like, I don't know how many people have actually played rugby. I have to admit, like, it's not a sport that I really, you know, you'll see it on some of the extra channels, this CBS Sports Network, you know, the different, not the regular channels. Don't watch it. And so I really don't know much about rugby. I see it. You know, obviously there's tackling involved and a football-shaped ball involved and some violent aspects to it. But I'm not sure, is it any more than hockey? And is it any more than really?
I think so.
Why?
Because there are no pads and because it's kind of up and down as opposed to like we've heard from some of our more educated listeners here. It's not 50 seconds at a time. Then you go sit, then you hop back in and then you go sit. But, you know, the miles per hour when you're on the skates certainly does escalate the violent collisions.
It does.
I think there's more contact, probably more collisions, maybe at a lesser rate. But still, I don't understand why you would go rugby over football.
Well, I also don't, probably because like you said, there's no pads. But I also feel like if you don't have pads on, you're a little bit more inclined to maybe not deliver a shot as hard as you would if you had pads on.
Well, that's the argument.
Get tackled, so like I'm not going to come in. I mean, unless you've just got a clean look at a smaller person like myself, you're not going to go in and just drop your shoulder and take one guy because of the effects it could have on you.
Mm. Well, that's the argument for football right now and helmets and maybe even taking the helmet away because people use it as a weapon. The theory is you wouldn't be able to do that. You would take a different mentality of lowering your head against somebody.
I think the reactionary time that you have in football would be a huge, not that they're going to do that, but that's not a safety feature that you can go with.
Right now, Bills hockey has moved into second place. In our poll, you got 6 minutes left to vote. At Tim Hill, 107.5. Football still leading the way. 49% of the vote, more than 150 votes in. We will give you the dramatic conclusion there. Golf is doing something that I think will make this weekend's Players Championship even more interesting to watch. And I want to tell you about that the baseball comment that you made about players coming in early. Mm-hmm. It's a long, long day for baseball. It is, but I think it can be overhyped.
If we weren't hitting 268 as a team, I would bunt a lot less. But since we don't hit very well and some of our batting averages aren't through the roof, then I got to try to get runners to third with less than two outs because it is easier to bunt than to get a base hit.
I think Chad Holbrook then added, especially when you're hitting 268 as a team after that, more bunting issues last night for the Gamecocks, but they did not have home run issues with three home runs, a 10-7 win over Liberty, improving their RPI to 24 today, headed into the Missouri series that will be critical to their NCAA tournament fate. Jen, what do you have for us?
Well, I know sometimes we try to give some insights into like the backstage, you know, a little glimpse into what happens, you know, in the breaks and stuff like that. So I recorded a little something that Bill was saying, you know, in the last break.
English bird ahead of moving. See the moving? Where the hill the boom is shooting. Hear the hoop? Donut.
I like how we had the band and the studio audience in here, too, during the last
break. People don't realize how big the studio is.
Right.
And talking about donuts.
The production value that goes into
it. Yeah, a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Quick Major League Baseball update just on the heels of that. If you haven't been paying attention to the National League Central Division in particular, the Cubs currently 17-17 overall, fourth in the division. Not sure if you guys were aware of that. Losers.
You want to head out back after the show?
Sorry.
I thought only callers do that with me.
Sorry.
That's your big comeback?
Right?
No. I just wanted to make sure we're a sports show. I wanted to keep everybody updated.
I'm sorry.
On the National League Central, and just in case you guys were wondering as well, NFC North. Just remind you from this past year, Bears 3-13 overall, dead last in the NFC North. Just FYI, losers.
That was just unnecessary as he looks outside the E.F. Martin Heating and Air Studios and crosses his legs and arms.
You know what? I can't.
What a year for the Chicago sports teams. You guys know where the Blackhawks ended up?
Jen, who are the reigning World Series champions?
Right. I don't remember.
Stop living in the past.
Okay, then if we're not living in the past, you're not supposed to bring up the record from last season.
No, I'm just pointing it out.
Jen just gave us a little head move
Did you
attitude.
See that? Like, yeah. That like, what was that about?
It looked like she might do a Z snap. Is that what's coming up next?
Something like that, yeah. And
if you give a you go girl, then I think that's our cue that the show is over today. Before that happens, wanted to tell you, if you have a chance to see it, an E60 documentary on perfect games in the big league, certainly worth your time on the ESPN. Saw it the other night. It was pretty amazing in several instances. This is basically just like first-person viewpoints from guys who have thrown perfect games or gotten close to throwing perfect games through their careers, through the years, through the decades in Major League Baseball. Don Larson, who famously did it for the Yankees back in the day, perfect game, only one to do it in postseason. He gives his insights, and they go like kind of inning by inning. My favorite one was David Wells. Said he got in 5:30 in the morning the day of that game, Saturday Night Live party the night before. He said he smelled like a brewery.
Well, I think that's
but had the curveball going and threw a perfect
game. I think that's been a big story before, hadn't it? Like about how he that particular like he was sweating. I think he's seen the interviews where he was like sweating alcohol right. In the field.
Dallas Braden, the guy who did it for the Oakland A's, Landon Powell, a former Gamecock, caught it. Mm-hmm. He says for some reason a routine was thrown off that day. He usually takes a shower before the game. He didn't have a chance to do that or other things. The one golf note I wanted to give you, by the way, that Kyle Stanley, former Clemson golfer, four under through four to start the Players' Championship. And you might want to take a closer look at Brooks Koepka here. He's got 10 events now, and if he hits a hole-in-one, Michelob Ultra will give out 95 cases of Michelob Ultra to fans who sign up on their website because there are 95 calories in a Mick Ultra. That's nice. Why they're going 95 cases. He's never hit a hole-in-one in his life, by the way, Brooks Koepka, or at least not on the PGA Tour, and the odds are 2,500-1 of doing it.
Sounds like a good Friday night you could have.
Final poll question results at Tim Hill 107.5. Today we asked you, which sports athletes do you have the most respect for? You had four options. My choice of basketball was in last place, just 10% of the vote. Baseball gets 20% of the vote in third place. Bill rallied you to second place for hockey, 22% of the vote, but football with 48% of the vote as the winner.